Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In Major League Baseball 2024, it objectively does not get worse than a series loss at home to the Chicago White Sox. So where do the Cardinals go from here, and will it include some drastic moves? That's coming up on B-Schaeff Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Schaeff Daily. Brendan Schaefer here with you in the evening hours of Sunday, May 5th, 2024. Once again, happy Cinco de Mayo, because we recorded this morning. Now we're recording again after the Cardinals lose the series to the Chicago White Sox with Sunday's loss in Game 3, the rubber game. Let me repeat, the Cardinals just lost a series in the year of our Lord 2024 to the Chicago White Sox at home. The White Sox entered this weekend with a 1-13 record in away games. They leave Busch Stadium with more away wins this weekend than they had the entire rest of the season to date. And the team on the losing end of that is your St. Louis Cardinals. So the question everybody's asking, what gives? Something's got to give with this team. So we'll talk about the reaction from Team Brass. We'll hear from Ollie Marmol with some of his post-game comments about the offense and about Giovanni Gallegos as well, because he is an example on the pitching side of where things went off the rails today for the Cardinals in a 5-1 loss at Busch Stadium. Brutal. Brutal all the way around for this Cardinals team that we're told repeatedly this is not the same as last year. This is different. And as somebody who has been in this clubhouse from time to time in 2024 and was there with frequency last year, I can tell you that it does feel different. It feels like a different clubhouse, but the results aren't different. This is a losing team. Last year's team was a losing team. And this is a bottom line league. It's a bottom line business. You have to win these games. You have to take these series if you want to be taken seriously in the context of MLB 2024. It's just what it is. It's just what it is. And right now, the Cardinals are on a 71-win pace. You can do the math yourself. It's right there around 71-91 again, which is the record they had last year. It's happening in a much different way, but the record is the record. And understandably, fans have their hair on fire right now because this is a bad look. You lost the series to the Chicago White Sox. This team had 6 wins coming into this weekend. They had 1 road win, and you lost this series. So will there be consequences for somebody for this is a question I think a lot of folks have right now out in Cardinals land. Is there something that can be done, and is there anything useful that could be done that they'll actually do to try and turn this thing around? Something substantive rather than just staying the course with the way things are going. Offensively, it is a massive problem. It is the number one problem. I saw the warning signs of this very early within the first couple of weeks of the season and said, you know, the pitching's actually done pretty well relative to expectations, but this offense is going to have to score more than 3 runs in a game with regularity or they're not going to win very many games because they didn't build a pitching staff full of Cy Youngs. They got one of them in Sonny Gray, but the rest of these guys, they're solid pitchers. But they're not going to be asked to do the types of things in their starts that's going to win you many games 2-1. In a perfect world, all these pitchers will exceed expectations and you can be in those types of scenarios. Cardinals were in the scenario today. Decision was made for Matthew Liberatore to start the game, even though he was only going to be maxed out at around 50 pitches, and he threw 50 exactly. He only gave up one run, and the run came on a Paul DeJong double. He came around to score after hitting the double, and it's one that just hopped over the head of Dylan Carlson in center field. He took a terrible route to it. It's just what it is. We can call it what it is. I'm a big Dylan Carlson fan, but I don't know if he thought it was a home run and he loafed after it or he just didn't get a read on it. It is one of those line drives right to you sort of thing where you have a hard time judging it. Maybe he took a bad route and just gave up on the ball, it seemed like to me. Is what it is. I don't know that he was 100% ready to come back just yet, but the Cardinals are desperate. They need a spark from somewhere, and they decided to activate Dylan Carlson for Sunday. We knew as of this morning that that was likely to be the case. Pedro Páez has sent back to Memphis. But my point with that is that Matthew Liberatore pitched very well. 50 pitches, 3 1/3 innings. Thought it was a smart, sensible decision by Marmol to bring him back out for the top of the fourth just to face that first lefty in the lineup and then turn things over to Kyle Leahy. Leahy looked better than we've ever seen him. Better than we've ever seen him at the big league level, the few times we've seen. Better than he's ever looked in Memphis. I haven't seen every game he's pitched in Memphis, obviously. Better than he's ever been in spring training. I mean, he was actually really good. He wasn't just like, oh, give him a pat on the head, like, good job, buddy. No, he was good. He was good enough that before today, I would have said, after the Cardinals figure out what they're really going to do long-term with that fifth starter spot, that Steven Matz spot, if it's going to be Liberatore or if he's going to shift back to the bullpen and they call somebody up, the guy you can send down and if you need a 40-man move, just send off the roster is probably Kyle Leahy. We just haven't really ever seen him do much. But today, he was throwing 96 and painting. I mean, he was really good. So I don't know if that's something they're going to consider keeping him around or if he threw too many innings to where they just need to get a fresh arm up. We'll see on that front. But from Liberatore and Leahy combined, which you knew going in that you were going to need innings from Leahy because Liberatore was on a pitch count and it was the decision made by the organization to start Libby anyway, despite the fact that they're coming up on a stretch of consecutive days playing without an off day. They've had off days Thursdays throughout the month of April. That's not going to be the case this time. They play in Milwaukee on Thursday, part of a longer stretch of consecutive days of playing baseball. So you're squeezing the bullpen a little bit, needed what Leahy gave them. And that got him through six, which is pretty good. I would make the case that a reason that you could have considered not starting Matthew Liberatore, and in fact, I did make this case yesterday, or this morning rather, is just the idea that you're going to strain that bullpen coming onto this longer stretch of games, and you knew that the triumvirate would not be available today. JoJo, Kittredge, Helsley was not going to be available today, is the assertion I made this morning in the previous episode of B-Shafe Daily. But in fact, as Alexa Dad explained during the game, Kittredge came in, he threw this morning, and he would have been available if the Cardinals needed him. You're down 5-1. He was never going to come into that game. But interesting that he would have been available despite throwing two innings on Saturday. Could have made the case that finding a guy from AAA who can get you five innings and then Libby throws those 50 pitches might have put your bullpen in a better spot. But I can also understand the argument against that being no guarantee that an Adam Klopfenstein comes up, Klopfensteinstein, and pitches well. If he gets beat up and you're pulling him in the fourth inning anyway, not only have you probably lost the game, but you've also not really gained a lot relative to what Liberatore was able to provide for you. I liked how Libby pitched. He pitched with that tenacity that he has out of the bullpen. And that's something I think 5 days from now, he's throwing 65 pitches in my rotation if I'm the Cardinals. I'm going to go ahead and play this out. If you were going to start it here in the worst optimal time to do it because of the stretch of consecutive games coming up and you've got a bullpen on fumes and all of those elements that they decided to proceed anyway in spite of, then you might as well let Libby do it again 5 days from now. He's pitching in Milwaukee if I had my druthers. Otherwise, why do the bullpen game thing in the first place? Try to build him up and see if you can't bottle what he was selling out there today for 3 1/3 innings because he actually looked really good. He was attacking hitters. He was not messing around, as Wilson Contreras would say. He was not joking around, right? Good from Libby. Really good to see that and hopefully something that he's able to build upon. And he's obviously been good all year in the bullpen role, but now we're seeing a little bit of a glimpse of him stretch back out. And I thought it went well. I just thought you were up against it because you knew that in making the decision to go Libby for 50 pitches, Leahy for whatever he can give you, there's going to be multiple innings left to cover, and the guys covering them are going to be John King, are going to be Nick Robertson, who still looks pretty solid to my eyes. But you also knew that Giovanni Gallegos was going to get into this game, and if the Cardinals had gone a different route, maybe 5 innings of Klopfenstein, 3 innings of Libertor on 50 pitches, perhaps you don't need to use Gio in this game. But if you're the Cardinals, you also can't hide Giovanni Gallegos forever. You had to get him back out there at some point. This was an obvious day that it was going to happen, and Gio gave up another home run. Folks, this is a situation that is no longer tenable for the St. Louis Cardinals. I respect what Giovanni Gallegos has done for this team over a number of years. Giovanni Gallegos cannot be on the active roster when the Cardinals get to the ballpark on Monday. He just can't be. Whether that's an injury designation and he goes on the IL, or if he insists, "I'm healthy, I'm good to go," he may end up being good to go for a different organization. You cannot have him on the active roster Monday. The ERA is 12. I don't know what it is. I like that the, and we'll play some Ollie Marmol audio, but the answer from Ollie was he was going to go check on him, because the last time he was asked about Gio when he gave up multiple runs, what was it, 4 runs in his previous outing, faced 4 hitters, they all scored. The comment was, actually, believe it or not, he's healthy. Well, I don't think he said believe it or not, but he said, no, physically he says he feels fine. This check on Gio might be, hey, physically, are you sure you feel fine? Because we like you in this org. Maybe you don't feel fine for 15 days and you can just take a breather. I'll be curious to see what ends up happening there, but I can't imagine him on the active roster Monday. So I don't know what that looks like. I don't know who comes up. I don't know if the Cardinals look to that Memphis bullpen and say, hey, there are some relievers on this team like Ryan Lutis who have some pretty good numbers. Yes, it'll require a 40-man spot. Yes, I can find you one. Believe me, if you ask, I will deliver that. I'm not going to start picking out names because there's no point in that, but you can find one. You can find a spot. You could even find a spot potentially by using the 60-day IL if you don't want to punt anybody off the bridge, so to speak. Tommy Edman's going to miss 60 days. He just is. And I would imagine that Riley O'Brien would as well. He did start playing catch on Saturday for the first time in the ramp up from his injury recovery, but I just think it's going to be a slow one for him as it's been to this point. So you can maybe make those decisions. Ryan Lutis would be an interesting call up. There are some other names down there in Memphis that you could consider. There are some other names that you're familiar with, like Andre Pallante, Zach Thompson. Thompson and Pallante have been piggybacking with one another, stretching into larger roles. And if you're going with Libertor into the rotation, you may want to have one of those guys to piggyback with him for a little while, sort of flip-flop.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
What they had been doing with, say, Steven Matz to begin the year when they knew he wasn't going to be able to go very deep. You have a long reliever available behind him. Libertor, I think, could work up to 60, 65 pitches in 5 days, and maybe Pallante or Thompson, whoever you decide to bring up, could perhaps be in a role of that ilk. But I just think one of those moves is going to end up being Giovanni Gallegos to either the IL or to the other place. And maybe there's a third option of he's willingly going to go down to AAA. Doesn't have to be sent to the injured list, because if he says he's healthy, it's like, okay, now he doesn't have to be sent to AAA. He doesn't have to agree to that, I should say. He would have to be on board with it. If he doesn't agree to it, then the Cardinals are kind of placed in that spot where they would have been last year with Jordan Hicks if he didn't turn things around. Remember, April 2023, Hicks was terrible. And it was a question of, do you send him down? He can tell you he's not going down because he's got enough service time. But if that happens and he digs his feet in, which I think did happen, but if he would have had another outing where he walked 2 and gave up a double, then Hicks might have been DFA'd at that point because he didn't want to go to the minors. Would Gio handle it differently? I don't know. He's got an option for next year. They'll have to pay him a buyout, but they're not picking up his option anyway, unless the performance just magically turns on a dime. But the only chance for that to happen is with another team in this system. It is not with the St. Louis Cardinals. Again, there's just nowhere to hide Gio at this point. I feel for the guy, but he is just getting lit up. So there's going to be a move there. Gio, like I said, he can't be on the roster Monday. He won't be. They will make a move. I just don't know if it's going to be injured list or if it's going to be another alternative there. So when I ask, is it time for drastic moves? I do think that's a drastic move when you've got a guy that's got as much tenure with the Cardinals as Gio does. Certainly 2 months ago down in Jupiter, Florida, he wasn't expecting to be in this spot 60 days later, but that's where the Cardinals, I think, are with him. I'm not saying this from any insider knowledge. I wasn't even at Busch today, but I was watching from afar, and I just cannot fathom a scenario where the Cardinals show up tomorrow and say, yeah, we're going to ride Gio through this. I think we have seen that stretch of time take place, and it has elapsed, and now it's going to be, what's it going to be, right? They're going to have to IL him or send him down, or you know, most drastic move would be DFA. And it's unfortunate. Hopefully it does not come to that. But like I said, the active roster will see a move. Will it see a second move to the bullpen? Kyle Leahy did throw 2 2/3 innings today. So do you send him down for a fresh arm, or do you say, or pardon me, 2 1/3 innings with 2 strikeouts, no hits, no walks? I mean, he was genuinely good. Threw 29 pitches, so not, I mean, he could probably bounce back relatively quickly from that. Personally, I wouldn't have expected me to say this 12 hours ago, but I would probably stick it out with him. You're looking for guys you can trust, and maybe he turns it somehow, right? Like, he doesn't look good prior to today that I've ever seen him, but he did today. So what have you done for me lately? Well, Leahy handled some nice innings for them today. 2 1/3, 29 pitches. Maybe he could pitch back again on Tuesday, perhaps. So I don't think I'd be sending him down. But you do want to sort of figure out where the gaps are going to come in. John King threw 34 pitches in relief. He did strike out 3 in an inning and 2/3, but gave up 3 hits and a run. I don't get the sense that they've really trusted John King much anyway to this point, so I'm not sure. Maybe he would be the move. And if you call Pallante as one of the guys to come back, or Thompson in that case, those are two guys that historically would profile as guys that can get lefties out. And Nick Robertson pitched to finish off the game today, got 4 outs, 2 of them strikeouts. His ERA is still 0. So I'd like to see him maybe go the Ryan Fernandez path of, okay, let's start to ease him into slowly more leveragey type of opportunities. Narrow the gap a little bit. He pitches today down 4. That's anybody that's in that bullpen needs to be comfortable doing that, and the manager needs to be comfortable with those guys doing that. But can you get him in when you're down 1 or you're tied, trying to keep a game close? Maybe that's something that we see Nick Robertson graduate to, and the Cardinals can say, hey, see, we did get something for Tyler O'Neill. I think that would help everybody with the organization be able to feel good about that situation, or better about it anyway. So that's what's going on the pitching side. I might as well, since we're talking so much Gio, I'll play this audio from Ollie, and then we'll get into what he said about the offense, which is really going to be where we'll spend most of our time today. But here was Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol asked about what he saw from Giovanni Gallegos in this one. Audio comes courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest.
Doesn't look right, man. It just doesn't. The finish on his pitches doesn't look right. Got ahead of Jimenez there, and it was 90-91, the pitch he hit out. It just, I'll go in and check on him, but it just doesn't look like the Gio we've seen. Velo's down, even the spin. Just there's not the same bite to it at the moment.
He's yeah. Talked to us about strength over the last couple of weeks, just to the point where it's time for the doc and see what something's going on there.
He's been working at it. He's changed his routine in the weight room because of it, because strength has been a concern. And like I said, it hasn't looked right.
Yeah. Here's something that I want to hone in on a little bit. Giovanni Gallegos came to spring. I don't know if this is anything about anything, but Giovanni Gallegos came to spring training looking very different physically. He was skinny, just plain and simple. Lost a bunch of weight. Remember that Zach Thompson intentionally lost a bunch of weight, and then his mechanics wore off. I wonder if it is as simple as, hey, what happened here? His body composition is different, and it's impacting his pitching. He's throwing 90-91. He doesn't have the giddy-up behind his pitches that he needs to be effective. And if that's the case, And we can point to two, I'll say prominent Cardinal pitchers, because both those guys you figured were going to be part of this pitching staff, and that's what their offseason entails. Who's advising that? That can't just happen. Like, I get it, be in the best shape you can, right? But you got to know the other side of what could happen there if that's a thing, right? And when it was discussed about Zach Thompson, it was like just an obvious presented after he was gone, presented like, well, you know, he lost weight, and so there's never going to be a guy who loses weight and then picks up velo on his fastball. It's always going to go the other way. Well, okay. What are those conversations like where they get into body composition stuff with all the guys on offense. We talked about it with Mason Winn at winter warmup, Alec Burleson, Luke and Baker. I'm genuinely curious if that's maybe the same scenario going on, and you hear Jeff ask about strength and is it time to get the doctors involved? That's the opening. That's all the window of opening that they needed to be able to put him on the IL tomorrow with whatever they need to call it. Doesn't matter. But, yeah, hopefully there is a physical limitation, because that would explain why he's been so poor on the mound. But anyway, like I said, Gio won't be on the active roster when the Cardinals get to Busch Stadium on Monday. My preference, IL, you can call it whatever you need to call it. Hopefully it is not something severe, but hopefully it's something mild that they can point to and say, this is why he's been struggling. We're going to get him on the program he needs to be on, strengthen back up, and figure it out in Memphis when he's ready to go out on a rehab in however many weeks. That's the way to handle that. We'll see what they do elsewhere on the bullpen side of things. Let's go ahead, though, and get into the offense, because I think that is the side of the ball where Cardinals fans are not only looking to say, change up the lineup, change up the roster, do whatever to try and spark this thing, but universally, it seems right now, Cardinals fans are ready to see somebody pay for what has happened. For one of the worst offenses in Major League Baseball that just got punked by the worst team in baseball at home. Coming into Sunday's game, the finale of the series, this was a stat that I looked up Sunday morning after I recorded the podcast for Sunday morning. Wilson Contreras, Nolan Arenado, and Michael Ciani were a combined 10 for 18 over the two previous games with six walks. The rest of the team was 1 for 48 with four walks. 1 for 48. And Jim Edmonds said on the broadcast, they're 1 for 48 this series with runners in scoring position. It was just overall. He said that, and I thought, somebody's going to correct him, right? But it never happened. Anyway, 1 for 48, other than Arenado, Contreras, and Michael Ciani, who had a hit in both of the first two games. Everybody else was just, I mean, I think Goldschmidt was 0 for the series, ultimately, because he went 0 for again today on Sunday. That's just an offense in disarray, and it didn't get any better really Sunday. Wilson Contreras did a Wilson Contreras thing, hit a home run. He's the only guy, I'll say the only guy, that you don't have to worry about in this lineup at this point. Well, Arenado's going to be okay. OPS dipped from an 0 for 4 today for him, but it's still 747. Arenado's actually going to be okay. I don't know if he's going to be great like he's always been, but I'm not as worried about him right now. Paul Goldschmidt, you can worry, man. You can hit that panic button if you're so inclined. Like, he might bounce back, but I can't sit here telling you he's going to. I have no idea. I have no idea how long this is supposed to last, how long everybody is supposed to just kind of be along for the ride and say, well, he's always turned it around, so he'll do it this time. Look, I'll tell you the same thing I told you however many days ago as it pertained to Arenado. He's going to have, if he has, I didn't predict he was going to, but I said if either of these guys have that day where they go 4 for 4 with a double and a home run and a walk, the OPS is going to look just like it's supposed to. And sure enough, that happened on Saturday. Arenado went 3 for 3 with two walks, hit a homer. His OPS was up to 770. He was hitting 290. It's like, all right, well, his OPS last year was 770. So suddenly, everything's not looking so terrible for Arenado. Goldie can have that day too, I guess, theoretically, but he doesn't look like a guy at the plate that is about to have that kind of day. He flat out does not. Just swinging through fastballs. It's nothing tricky necessarily that's getting him. Two more strikeouts today. I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do with Paul Goldschmidt at this point. You can move him down in the lineup, whatever. That is rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. It is. It might have a minuscule impact where he gets to bat less often, so that helps the team because right now he's an anchor. But I just, if that's what you're spending your time focusing on, you're done anyway. As a team, I'm saying you're done. If it's the difference of Goldie's going to bat fifth or he's going to bat seventh, fine. Make that change. It just doesn't matter. Bat third, bat fifth, bat ninth, it does not matter. He's going to hit or this team's not going to be where it wants to be. Period, the end. And the fact that everybody else is slumping with him, including, I'll say, a Mason Winn, whose OPS is now below 700. So he started really, really strong, but you know he's in the boat with everybody else right now. He did have a hit today, one of four for the St. Louis Cardinals. And even when these guys are getting hits, it's typically not a rally. It's not extra bases. Four hits today, three singles, and the Wilson homer. Newt Barr had a hit. Donovan had a hit. And you look at that and go, all right, those guys had a hit. Well, look at their numbers, though, still. 649 OPS for Donovan. That's not what you want. Newt Barr batted ninth today. And that's fitting because he's got the worst numbers on the team right now, unfortunately. 169 average, and even after the hit today, a 537 OPS. I don't know what you do. I don't know what the drastic change you make on this side of the ball is. I would say that I'm in favor, and this counts for the pitching side too. I'm in favor of them making any move. I won't push back. I won't argue against on any move that's not permanent. Anything you want to do. If it's send Newt Barr to Memphis, which I would, the other side of that would be you'll make Nolan Arenado become a rage monster. There's no reason to send his buddy out. But like, Newt Barr doesn't look good. Even had a hit today. That's great. 537 OPS. It's May. We're going to be 6 weeks into the season when you look up here soon. So, no, I wouldn't send Newt to Memphis, but, I mean, he's not performing. He's not doing much for you. Donovan has been leading off the whole way through, but you're just not getting the power from him. You're not getting... He's hitting 215 as your leadoff hitter. Goldie's hitting 208. Carlson came back today with an 0 for 3 and a defensive lapse. Herrera is just sunk right now offensively. He's down to 616 on the OPS meter. And they ruined Fermin too because he got a start today finally in Gorman's place against a tough lefty. 0 for 3, 2 Ks. It's like, man, oh man. 11 strikeouts as an offense. They stink right now offensively. They just do. So is it Turner Ward? Is that the answer? Is that the drastic move this team needs? Many of you would suggest it's Ollie Marmol. I am not at that point, but I also just don't know what there is left to do if you're not ready to shake something up for the sake of shaking something up. I would start smaller than firing the manager because I do continue to maintain that Ollie Marmol is a good manager. I have no idea if Turner Ward is a good hitting coach. I know guys like Paul Goldschmidt like him. I don't really care if he's liked at this point, and I hate the sacrificial lamb game, but it is a business, and it's a performance-based business, and his job is to coach the hitters, and he is currently coaching a group of hitters that are one of the worst in Major League Baseball as a team. I don't know what the sample size is that you need in order to decide that, yes, we've seen enough, and this is a real problem, and we have to do something urgent to address it. But the Cardinals are 29th in OPS. The only team better is the team that just beat them 2 of 3. Cardinals are 29th, or now they're tied for 29th in home runs, with the White Sox hitting the homer off of Gio, pulled back into a tie for last in homers. Wilson had the one earlier in the game to put the Cardinals ahead for a moment. 29th in runs scored. The only other team below you is the White Sox. This is pitiful. And it's May 5th, so... You know, you'd be listening to this maybe on May 6th. So keep that in context. That's fine. But I'm not going to sit here and say it's early. I'm not going to sit here and say be patient. I'm going to say the numbers are the numbers, and this team is 29th in just about every offensive category. There's nothing left to do other than urgent action. So do you want to send Nolan Gorman down and bring up Thomas DeJacy? I won't argue with you. Like I said, I don't know if sending Newt Barr down is going to have your star player feeling the best about things. And I also don't know, like, what's Lars Newbar going to go down to Memphis and do to improve? He just got to get back to what he does. He doesn't strike out really like on the level that Nolan Gorman strikes out. Is there anything that Gorman can go down and do? I have no idea. I have no earthly idea. I don't know the answers. I don't have them. I know that Cardinals fans feel like the answer is fire everybody. And it very well could start at the top with John Mozeliak. But again, I would urge you to go back into the offseason and think about, how did you feel about the offense coming in? What did you think it would be? Because even if you thought, all right, I don't think it's a very great offense. I'm looking up and down this list, and these guys have some nice potential, but who's ever really consistently done a lot to have confidence that they're going to be in a great spot offensively this year? Maybe that was the way you thought about it. I didn't. I thought they'd be a pretty good offense. I've seen a lot of sentiment from Cardinals fans saying, why have we anointed Lars Nootbaar? Why have we anointed Brendan Donovan as these stars in the making? Well, I mean, they've had some good numbers. You can't pretend like these guys haven't performed well in past years. And I'm not saying that this team was to be loaded with all-stars and superstars, but you had guys like Lars Nootbaar and Brendan Donovan who you felt you could probably pencil in for an OPS plus of 110, 115. And I thought this was going to be a lineup littered with those types of guys. OPS plus, league average is 100, so if you're above that by 10%, every one you go up is a percentage point that you go up. Lars Nootbaar's in his fourth year. He's got a career 111 OPS plus, even counting the games that he's played this year, which have been poor. 11% above league average is pretty good. Brendan Donovan, he's a 115 OPS plus in his third year, even considering the numbers that he's put up so far this season. It's still his OPS plus for his life is 115. That's 15% above league average. There was no reason to think that Donovan and Nootbaar would come out and be 10% or more below league average right now, which is what they both are. Donovan's an 89 OPS plus. He's 11% below league average. He's below league average by a healthy chunk, and Nootbaar has been the same way. I'll check on Nootbaar's OPS plus, but I'm sure it's even worse. 55. That's not good. 45% below league average. Smaller sample, though, on Nootbaar because of the injury to begin the year. But these guys were supposed to be not just average, but 10% better than average, 15% better than league average players, and they're tanking you right now, the both of them. All right, Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt, we know those guys were supposed to be, well, let's look at it this way. Even if they were what they were last year, which everybody was disappointed in, understandably so, Arenado last year was 109 OPS plus, 9% above league average. And that was easily his worst year as a Cardinal to date. So you thought, all right, it's probably going to get a little better from here. Now he's actually 23% above league average, apparently, but this is using Baseball Reference prior to today's 0-for-4. But his OPS of 770, I guess the league is down offensively. I don't really know how you come up with basically the same OPS year to year, but a 14% boost. I guess the league might be down offensively. Maybe that explains it. But like, all right, Arenado, fine. He's still performing okay to where it's... he's not cratering you. He was for a while, but he's really turned it on, and it's not a problem. Goldschmidt is 74 on the OPS plus meter with a 596 OPS, and again, that's before the 0-for today. Last year, he was 120. Year before, he was 177. So you could say, all right, there's been a stark decline in Goldschmidt, and they should have seen that coming. That's okay. If that was your take and you say, look, I saw him fall off last year, and I think he's done. Don't extend him. If that was your take, then I could see that being a defensible viewpoint that somebody might have had in November, December, January, coming into the year and said, don't count on Goldie to be that guy because he's not going to be. He's not even going to be the 120 OPS plus that he was in his, quote, down year of 2023. So if you saw that coming, that's fine. I don't think anybody out there saw Nootbaar going from 11% above average to 10% to, hell, 45% below like he is right now. Nobody saw Donovan going from 15% above average to 11% below league average the way that he is right now. Just nobody would have predicted that. And then coincide with the Goldie Arenado stuff, which maybe you would have thought they would be a step off of what you're used to seeing from them. But how about Nolan Gorman? Let's do him next. This is a guy coming into his third year. He's had two major league seasons, not full seasons, but last year, 464 plate appearances. He was 17% above league average last year. 117 OPS plus. This year, he's a 70, 30% below league average, which has cratered his career numbers to a 106. OPS plus. Still above league average in his career in almost 900 plate appearances. So was John Mozeliak in his defense? And look, he's not going to have a lot of long-term defense from me because he still has to win this year or he should step aside. It's that simple. But I'm also not going to demand he has to step aside on May 5th. I'm okay with, hey, you've got a legacy here. You knew it was going to be on the line coming into this year, and it was your job to fix it. Credit to you for what you did on the pitching side. Sonny Gray was a smash. Great signing. Lance Lynn, I think, is a solid signing. Should throw more strikes, and you'll really like him. Kyle Gibson's been an incredible signing so far. We'll see him on Monday and see if he's able to continue the start that he's had. Every start he's had has been six or more innings. Pretty impressive. Did what he had to do on the starting rotation, largely, although going into any season with Steven Matson, your starting five means that you're going to need to be ready with the depth, and we'll see if that depth group ends up producing somebody that can consistently get the job done. And Miles Michaelis, you know, it's not a decision that was made this offseason, but back in February of 2023 or whenever that was, you decided Michaelis needed an extension, and now we're going to see whether or not that ends up being okay. I think he can kind of settle in as a number three, number four in your rotation, getting you those quality starts where he gives up six innings, or he throws six innings rather, gives up three runs. Like that can, he can level that out, but is there the upside anymore of all-star Miles Michaelis? We'll see. So I'm not coming after him for his pitching, and truthfully, I wasn't asking him to do much more with the offense. However, if everybody can universally agree, which maybe you were shouting from the rooftops in the offseason, let me know in the comments if you were. I respect it, that the offense wasn't going to be good enough. But I would argue that you didn't think Nootbaar, Donovan, Gorman, and I'll throw Jordan Walker into this as well because he's in Memphis right now, despite in his rookie year finishing with a 787 OPS, which was higher than Nolan Arenado. I mean, he was a better offensive player in many ways last year than Nolan Arenado. I think OPS is valuable. It's not the only thing, but that he out-OPSed Arenado last year tells you something about the 21-year-old kid who's still 21, doesn't turn 22 until later this month. He was a 114 OPS plus last year as a rookie, 14% above league average. He's a 44 OPS plus this year. That's 56% below league average. So even if you were somebody who said Mo needs to do some things about this offense in the offseason, I'm not saying I don't believe you, but did you legitimately think that Nootbaar, Donovan, Walker, and Gorman would all go from solidly healthily above league average, and these aren't old guys that are ready to tail off like Arenado and Goldie, which Arenado's not old either, but folks think there's an age-related decline going on there. I'm not convinced that that's the case. I think he's been dealing through some nagging injuries, whether it's the back or whatever it's been that he's been trying to play through, really going back to last year. And if he can really ever truly get healthy and get in the right headspace with a team that's thriving around him, I think Nolan Arenado is probably going to be okay. Goldschmidt, you can maybe make the case more toward the age-related decline if you're worried about him. But I'm just talking about the young, up-and-coming players that, if anything, they should have all taken steps forward if they were the guys that everybody sort of considered them universally to be. Donovan, Nootbaar, Gorman, Walker. That's almost half of your lineup filled with young, emerging talents that are across the board performing well below expectations and well below average. Expectations were up here, 110, 115 OPS plus. That's not asking for all-star. That's not what the demand was for anybody in that group. Be 10 to 15% above league average, which is what you've all been throughout your careers to this point. And the Cardinals are going to be a really interesting lineup, especially if they can get bounce backs from Goldie and Arenado. And even if you don't get bounce backs, just do what they did last year. And that's six guys in a range from 110 to 120 OPS plus, 10 to 20% above league average, six of them. And we haven't said Wilson Contreras' name. You know that Wilson Contreras is going to be good, and he's been better than you could have hoped so far this season. What's his OPS plus? 166 before he homered today. He's a career 117. So throw him in there. This lineup, again, you might disagree with this. The numbers say that you shouldn't have disagreed with this. There's no way you thought, other than I'll give you Goldie and Arenado, because there were a lot of people saying that. Hey, I don't think those guys are going to be as good. Okay, you were right. It appears you nailed that one. You didn't think these other guys were going to suck, did you? There's no way that collectively these guys were supposed to be this bad. And it's not over, but it's not early. Your sample size continues to grow, and you are what your numbers say you are. All that the it's early talk means is there's still calendar left to adjust the numbers. But eventually, it gets more difficult to adjust. When you have an opening day and you go 2-for-4, your batting average is 500. Holy crap, you're amazing. The next day you go 0-for-4, you're now 1-for-8 on the year. Your batting average is 125. Well, I was amazing yesterday. Yeah, but then you went 0-for-4. So your numbers changed. When that happens the second day of the season, it's very noticeable. But what it means is, on the third day of the season, when you go 4-for-4, well, now you're 5-for-12. That's like a 417 batting average or whatever it is. Now you're amazing again. Yeah, I nailed that. 417. That's good math. 416, 6 repeating. That's 417. Round up. You can't change the numbers as drastically when you get deeper and deeper into the season. It's still early enough that yesterday, Arenado went 3-for-3 with a homer and I think a double and had two walks, and his OPS shot up to 770 from wherever it was. I don't even think it was 700 before the game. Today he goes 0-for and it's back down to 740-something. So those drastic changes can still happen, but they're more minuscule. They're a little more measured off of one day of success, the more of a sample you get. So I'm not telling you it's early. I'm not patronizing. I'm not trying to act like this is not time to panic, because I think it is time to be very concerned. You can put it at DEFCON 1. It doesn't mean that, nuclear war is imminent is what DEFCON 1 means. That's the bad DEFCON, by the way. Maybe it is a false alarm, but you can go ahead and you can sound them. You can sound the alarms, because it's time to brace for the possibility that this offense isn't very good. Even if this offense turns it around, they're not going to be a top 5 or top 10 offense. There's no way without something jarring that changes, that forces it, that explains it. I just can't fathom you go from 29th in baseball as an offense after a sample size that is not nothing. It's been a month and a week at this point. A little more than that even, perhaps. You go from March 28th to May 6th, May 5th, May 6th. It's a sample. I mean, it's enough to go, all right, well, why are you the worst offense in baseball this side of the Chicago White Sox? What explains that? What explains everybody but one person in this lineup underperforming? Contreras is the only one. He's on the island at this point as the only one not underperforming. I'll say Mason Wynn is not. Okay, Mason Wynn is not underperforming, but if he goes 0 for his next 8, then he is. But a 687 OPS is about what if you would have told me that February 1st, I'd have said, I'll take it, because he's going to be a great defender and he's going to get better as he goes throughout his career, but that's at least serviceable. And then Wynn was much better than serviceable, but now is slumping like the rest of the team as he sees the numbers decline. There was just no way for the Cardinals to have been this bad. So what is it and what needs to change? You can keep sending guys to Memphis if you want. There's enough guys with options remaining that you could do it. Call up Thomas Tejesi, who's not lighting the world on fire in AAA, but he's got like a 750, 760 OPS, something like that. You could do some things. You could shake it up like that. My thought is this, though. I don't really, if the Cardinals like Turner Ward, that doesn't really actually matter. If anything, and it's not fair to the man himself, but you could see the argument that they just need to have a sacrificial lamb and shake something up, because what's working, there's no, what is going to be the jumpstart if it's not a fulcrum point moment, something that actually happens that gets them to perform differently. I'm not suggesting the Cardinals are happy with the way things are going, but they maybe need to be unhappy with it on a new level. You cost a man your job with your poor performance. And again, this is not life and death. Cardinal baseball is not life and death, as much as sometimes it might feel like that out there, because you do live and die with your team as a Cardinal fan. I know you guys do. But it's actually, we can be honest, it's not life and death. But it is a business that people are invested in on an emotional level. So it's not just free passes out here at the big league level. This is the big leagues, as Tim McCarver would say. So Turner Ward might be a nice guy, and he might be a good coach, but he's not producing the results right now. Again, I tend to lean toward hitting coaches end up as the scapegoat for things, but might be time for a scapegoat. I don't know. I'm not advocating fire Turner Ward, because I know that that's what people out there want me to do. They probably want me to tell you that Ollie needs to be fired and Mo does too. I am not going to tell you that today. But I also say this is a season where if it's no longer early and you look up and you did lose 91 games again, everybody probably goes. Everybody maybe except Ollie because they did give him the extension. And so Mo steps down, is nudged to step down, or has the sense to do it himself. If, again, I'm talking like if they lose 91 games, yeah, you don't fire Mo because Bill DeWitt won't, but Mo can't be leading this team anymore if they lose 91. He can't. It has to be done. And somebody else has to have a turn. And then that person can decide what their relationship with Ollie Marmol is. And I know what you're thinking is like, well, come on, of course Ollie's bad if this team loses 91 again. I still won't know that that's true. We'll see the way that this year unfolds. But I will say this for Ollie Marmol and for those who might critique him. He doesn't have any answers at this point. But on the other side of that, I don't know what he is supposed to say. It sounds like really neither does he. He just needs to see different results. But he's acknowledging, hey, these questions about the offense are good and fair. We just have to come out of it. But here's some quotes from Ollie Marmol. You can hear the audio courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest from after this game today and see what you think for yourself, and we'll talk about it.
That's a great question. You got to keep working. Bottom line, may not want to hear it, but that's all we can do is continue to work, continue to pay attention to the details pregame, and what they're doing down below in the cage has to carry out into the game sooner or later. But there is no answer to it other than work, and that's what's taking place right now.
Where do you see that disconnect? Because we know you see the work. We know you see the guys doing the stuff they're supposed to be doing. Where do you see the disconnect show up in results?
There's no good answer for it. I mean, we can sit here and talk about it all day. The reality is sometimes it carries over, sometimes it doesn't. Those guys are working hard at it. It's not carrying over into the game right now. We've had months like this before where it doesn't look very good, and then we come out of it. We need to come out of it. But, yeah, a day like today, a series like this one, you got to figure out a way to take this series. And we didn't. We didn't even give ourselves opportunities to do that today.
The most frustrating part about the series loss?
It'd be the same answer if you asked what's the most frustrating thing about the season. And is I think so many things are looking really good as far as how we want to play the game, the style of the game we want to play, what the pitching's doing, what the bullpen's doing, and the offense is struggling. And that's an area that we honestly felt pretty good about coming into the season. Some guys are adjusting to their second, third year in the league, and it's been tough on them. Other guys got off to a slow start. There's no excuses other than the offense is struggling at the moment. We got to find a way out of it. So the most frustrating part is that the other side of the game is looking really good, but we can't put it together in order to win ball games at the moment.
There it is. I mean, Ollie Marmol doesn't really have the answers, and I don't know how he's supposed to have them. Like I both sides of this coin. You hear him there, and I think, honestly, he's pretty much candid with telling you what's going on, what he is seeing, and it's not good. He's not telling you it's good. He's not making excuses. Cardinals fans, all the time I see him say, they got to stop making excuses. He's not. He's telling you the offense is bad. I know. We have to hit or we're not going to win. I know. He's aware of it. He's at a loss in the same way that Cardinals fans are at a loss, but they tend to think that the answer is to take his job. So, you know, he's probably not going to agree with that, but you hear in there, what's the frustration? Well, the frustration is we're doing the things well that we set out to do this year. We wanted to play cleaner baseball. We wanted to prioritize defense. That's happening. We wanted to be a better base running team. I believe I heard the stat on the broadcast today that they've taken more bases than any team in baseball. I forget the exact verbiage of it, but bases taken, whatever it was. Like, that's something that they're doing and they're excelling at. Pitching. You want to talk pitching? I mean, they took a rotation that was just completely haphazard, shoddy, didn't get deep into games, wasn't filling innings, was putting more strain, undue strain on the bullpen. And they have largely been really solid in the rotation. I know that Michael has had his rough ones, but he's also had some where he's been able to get you the six innings and the three runs, which is really all you need from him. And Steven Matz has struggled, but he's injured right now, so you can understand that. Granted, if you're Mozeliak, you should have expected that from Matz. But maybe they did, and they baked in and said, look, we think a Livermore or a Thompson's going to have to step up because we can't go out and fill Every time we need to fill a spot in the rotation, it's going to be done via free agency, spending a bunch of money. No, we need to develop some of these guys, and these are the guys that are there to be developed, so let's see them take a step forward. That was the hope. And they're going to give Libertor maybe that next shot to do that. Thompson was the guy that got the first crack at it, and they're still working toward that to see what he can provide. All he says, the frustration is we're doing all those other things. The one thing we're not doing is the thing that we didn't think we had to worry about. The offense we thought would kind of just be there. And maybe that was the attitude. Maybe that's why they're struggling. I don't know. You hear him say the work is happening. The work is happening the way that it needs to. Now, I don't know that I would expect to hear him say anything different than that. And I also don't know that he's not telling the truth. I'm inclined to believe him. You might not be, but let me know in the comments if you disagree. That's fine. But I listened to a manager there who's at a loss because the one thing that you really can't fix unless it just starts to happen in the batter's box at a higher level is the one thing holding this team back. You can always prioritize defense and play a cleaner brand of baseball. You can find different pitchers to say, look, this guy's not cutting it. We gotta bring in this other guy. This guy's going to be DFA. This guy's going to go on the injured list. You can do those things. You can say, hey, base running is effort. It's paying attention. It's doing the little things. Hitting a homer is not little. I mean, it's just you can hit it or you can't. I can't, so I'm sitting here talking to you about it. There are guys on this team who are supposed to be able to do it, but they're tied for 29th in baseball and homers. And when you're tied for 29th, that means you're last. You're dead last in it. They're 29th in runs scored. They have to be able to hit the ball. They have to be able to come through in clutch scenarios. They're not doing these things at a rate even close to what they need to be able to do, and so they are four games below 500. If the pitching was bad too, this team would be 10-24 instead of 15-19. The pitching has actually been solid. Now, you've got some gripes with the bullpen. Those are going to be addressed in whatever manner that they can be. Gallegos won't be in the bullpen tomorrow night as an eligible participant. I'm just predicting it now. Monday night, there will be a move that's made on him. There just has to be. Is that drastic enough for Cardinals fans? I don't know that it is, because I can understand where you would say, well, no, the bullpen, yeah, we want to make sure they've got the best guys out there, but this is an offensive problem. And if it's to the point where the names that you're talking about, Nootbaar, Gorman, like optioning these guys, I don't know what good that's going to do. Get them to kind of find their confidence back maybe and then bring him back in. But otherwise, there's nowhere left to turn until you get to the coaching staff. And they have had sort of rotating cast of minor league coaches come in. Russ Steinhorn, I think was around last week. And now they've got one of the other guys from one of the other minor league levels that has been hanging around. So there are things that they're trying to do to get different eyes on this thing. But I don't know what the answer is. How do you measure what a hitting coach does other than is the offense he's guiding performing? Is he putting the work in? That's great. There are jobs out there where people put the work in and they do their best to succeed. And in the business world in particular, it doesn't guarantee that they're going to. And at the end of the day, results are what matters the most. And it's to the point where I wonder if, and the Cardinals aren't, I don't think they're going to, by the way. I don't think they will fire Turner Ward. I think doing so won't necessarily fix it, other than you could just have any create a name coach in that spot, which is, I think, the way a lot of fans feel about it. These guys are humans and they've got families and they're doing, again, everybody's got a family. So are you performing? That really has to be the way that you, the prism through which you view this whole thing. And I totally understand that. But my point is, in hockey, anytime you fire a head coach, it seems like the team gets a boost. How long that boost lasts depends. But it's pretty universal that, yeah, if you want a boost, just fire whoever's in there. Well, what's his name? Yeah, it doesn't matter. He's the head coach, and what tends to happen in the NHL is you fire the guy, and the team takes off. All right? I'm not saying that it's that simple when it comes to hitting coach. I'm not saying that there couldn't be a boost by a shakeup just because it'll make the people involved feel a different way. You get you different perspective. You've got a different angle on it. And I understand that logically, I can't be saying they're putting in the work and they're doing everything possible and then say, well, the guys that are guiding them on this work, if you fire them, it could turn things around. Like, that doesn't make logical sense if both things are true. But I do believe that they're putting in the work. But I also think that sometimes just stuff happens. And are the Cardinals in a spot where they could afford a stuff happens sort of drastic move just to do something and shake it up? It feels kind of icky to be talking about because I just don't know that that's the way it always works. But if they did it and the results changed, it's a means to an end, right? And it's unfortunate that it's reduced to that, but it's the reality, I think, when you're in this performance-based business. How do you measure a hitting coach? I think it continues to be the question. These players have to play better, but you can't change all the players. You can keep swapping them with the other guys in Memphis, but eventually you're just going to be bringing back up the guys that you sent down there in the first place. Can you change the hitting coach? Cardinals fans, I think, want that at the bare minimum. They'd like the manager gone too. I get it. I'm not there. And I'm not even going to tell you that they need to fire the hitting coach because in theory, they could come out of it tomorrow and they could start swinging a hot bat and they could go on a run. But what are you seeing at the plate right now that's suggesting that's coming? They had a Joe Boo doll in the dugout today for crying out loud. From the Major League franchise, the movies. Like, they're willing to try anything. It's not that they're happy with the way things are going right now, but you have to eventually just say, look, what they're doing isn't working, so you might have to make a more drastic change. If we wake up tomorrow and that's the move, it's Turner Ward, then I wouldn't be shocked. But I'm not sure I advocate for it because I think the players also have to be the ones to make their decisions. But I couldn't argue against it. If you were going to tell me, hey, this is something that they're going to try to shake things up, I'd go, well, I understand. Because with the way things are going right now, that turnaround doesn't feel imminent. And they could have a day where it's great. I mean, heck, they scored five runs on Saturday. And yet you get into a spot where you get the bases loaded, nobody out handed to you, and you don't put a ball in play. I don't know if it's approach. I don't know what it is that's causing this team to underperform across the board so drastically. But the one person whose job it is literally to figure it out is Turner Ward. So if it doesn't happen in a period of time, whatever that determination is, then just like in any other line of work, you could see that person and the organization parting ways. So we'll see. I don't know. They need to hit. It's tough because we do the same podcast every day. This is the most I've talked about the Turner Ward stuff because it's unavoidable at this point. When you get blitzed by the White Sox of all teams, and the one day where you do score runs is also a day where you lose the game because of your inability to put a ball in play with the bases loaded and nobody out, the next three guys strike out. Bad call on the last one, but the other two, how do you explain it? At some point in this business, people tend to take the fall for that. Maybe that point is not May 5th, May 6th, but do you build yourself or dig yourself such a hole that eventually you're not able to come out of it if you don't try and act with urgency at this point? Those are questions for John Mozeliak. I'll play the audio, too, of Ollie Marmol being asked about that exact question of what do you do? Is there a move to be made as far as the coaching staff? And Ollie goes to bat for his guys, and I wouldn't expect anything different, but here's the audio for you, courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest.
When the offense is stuck like this, You tried lineup changes, you try to pull different levers. How do you balance sticking with what you're doing versus trying to maybe continue to look for ways to shake things up, whether that's introducing different voices or you know, going down bigger routes to try to jar something free here?
No, I like the voices we have, man. I can't speak higher of Turner and B.A. and Packy and what they do in that department. No one's getting a whole lot of sleep right now, I'll tell you that. They're working at it. They're trying to make sure they're not missing anything. The communication with the players has been really good. It sucks. Bottom line, it just does. So, yes, we continue to look at everything possible to make sure we get out of this. But these are the players we're going to win with. And we got to get them going. Yeah.
Ollie Marmol likes the voices they have on that coaching staff on the hitting side. Can't speak highly enough of the work that they do. And I don't doubt a word that's coming out of his mouth, right? You may. That's fine. Let me know in the comments. Tell me I'm a shill. Whatever. I don't care. I'll believe the guy. But the caveat is it doesn't matter unless you get results. And if they don't get results at some point, when does that point come? When is enough enough? You're the 29th offense in baseball. you're supposed to be top 10 across the board. If your name isn't Wilson Contreras or Mason Wynn, maybe a flyer on Alec Burleson. If your name isn't one of those names, you're not doing your job as a player. And so you can't fire every player. It's the players we're going to win with, Ollie Marmol said. And he's right. Largely, it's going to be the case. If it gets shaken up as a roster, it's going to be by another president of baseball ops, another GM, and it's going to happen in the offseason, right? This season, they've got the guys that they've got within the organization. They can make a trade here and there, but this is not a team. If you're on a 91-loss pace, that's not a team where you go, yeah, add a piece, and you're good. But the Cardinals might need like a personality shakeup, if anything. I'm not saying they got bad personalities, but they don't have, I don't know. It's not that they don't even have guys with an edge. They've got some edge, but they're rolling over right now with the way things are going offensively. Don't misconstrue that for me saying, oh, he thinks they're not trying. No, but the numbers are the numbers. And the approaches are not consistently great. I'm still seeing pitches that you could jump on taken. You don't have to take a 2-0 fastball down the middle. You don't have to. It's not a rule that you have to take it. You can swing at it. You can swing at it and try to hit it a long way. You can be ready for those pitches. You can be ready for what the opposing starter might do to you. You can come in with a game plan. Are they doing those things? If they are, it's the worst game plan in the history of the world. If they're doing all those things and are just not executing, then that's on the players. But it's not unfair to question anything at this point in time. It's not a sample size of a series or a week or 2 weeks. It's been a month plus, and it's not looking right for the Cardinals offensively. So the guys, the coaches in that room, I'm sure they're doing everything that they can. But sometimes you do everything that you can, and you're not the voices for that group at that time. And every person in that room can back you and say, no, we want him to stay. Well, at some point, somebody who's not in the room might have to step in and say, well, we're either adding coaches or we're subtracting them or we're doing a little bit of both, because we have to eventually not be the 29th best offense in baseball when you look on paper and see a group that should be at minimum in the top half. So I don't know what the answer is, Cardinals fans. I'm ready for you to tell me what the answer is, though. We've gone an hour. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. There's not a lot to say, and yet we found a way to talk about it for an hour. So let me know your thoughts on this podcast, on where the Cardinals are at and what you think needs to be done pertaining to the bullpen, to the rotation, to this offense, and even the coaching staff, as they're struggling to find answers right now. And you don't want to have too much season happen to where you wake up on July 27th and say, well, of course we have to sell at this point. It's just the prudent thing. Can't sell that to Cardinals fans again. There should be angst among the fan base, because John Mozeliak has told you all to be patient over the past 14 months, whatever it's been. And I don't know that you should be obligated to do that at this point, because they're not giving you anything right now to believe that this thing is imminently going to turn. I hope that a week from now we're having podcasts talking about the Cardinals on a, you know, winning 5 of 6 and doing so by scoring 5 or more runs in every game. That'd be wonderful. I'd have a lot easier of a time doing this show if that ends up being the way. But until it happens, I have to analyze what's actually going on with this team. So forgive me. I don't think anybody out there is telling me I'm being too hard on the team. Probably the people listening here might think the opposite, because I still say, no, you let it play out with your manager and your Pobo right now, because it's their job. It's incumbent upon them to fix it, right? So the work, it's being done. It has to keep getting done, or the Cardinals are going to find themselves in a very similar spot that they were last year, even if the clubhouse is in a much better place. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I'll say one more thing before I go. I just want to start putting this in the end of podcast so people know and aren't surprised by it. Thursday through Sunday, I will be out of town. I'm in a wedding. I'm a best man in a wedding next weekend. So it'll be the first time all year that you won't hear much from me. Just be ready for that. I'll start talking about it more over the next couple of days so everybody can mentally prepare. But be on aware when Thursday comes and there's no show. It's like, whoa, why isn't he talking about the Brewers game one? Well, I'm in a wedding. It is what it is. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Be Shafe Daily. Peace.